Tonight, a look at the damage to Gaza's only Catholic church after it was struck by Israeli artillery. The building's still standing, but church officials say three people were killed. Two of them buried today, their funerals at the neighboring Greek Orthodox church. As they were leaving after finishing their prayer, they were targeted, said this man who was sheltering in the church. The strike prompting a call and criticism from President Trump.
What is the president's reaction to that church coming under fire?
It was not a positive reaction. He called Prime Minister Netanyahu this morning to address the strikes on that church in Gaza.
The IDF says fragments from a tank shell fired nearby hit the church mistakenly. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu saying Israel deeply regrets that a stray ammunition hit Gaza's Holy Family Church. Every innocent life lost is a tragedy. We share the grief of the families and the faithful. Among the lately injured was the parish priest, Father Gabriel Romanelli. It was Father Romanelli who the late Pope Francis called every day in the months before he died to check up on the church and the tiny Catholic community here as it kept its faith under fire. Tonight, Pope Leo calling it a military attack on the church and saying he was deeply saddened and he renewed his calls for an immediate ceasefire.
So this is the latest story about how horrible, no good Israel is. They've actually attacked a Catholic church in Gaza. How could it get worse than that? The trouble is, it isn't true. But the trouble is, the Pope accused Israel of doing that. The Pope ignored the apology of Benjamin Netanyahu. We'll hear an explanation of it today. But even worse than that, things can happen in war, accidents, you know, things that are inadvertent. But this whole issue of accusing Israel of intentionally of shooting at and just trying to destroy this Catholic church is just jaw-dropping to me. And it's having its effect. Michael Knowles is a well-known podcaster. Many of you may know who he is. He spoke at Charlie Kirk's TPUSA recently. Very winsome. He's got a great voice. This was his response.
As I've mentioned before, everyone seems to hate the state of Israel these days, mostly coming from the left, but some people on the right have joined. And I've been broadly supportive of the state of Israel, not really as an ideological matter, but as a matter of prudence. And you're losing me. You're losing me. When you strike churches, the only church in Gaza, even if accidentally, but especially if not accidentally, you're losing me. If you're losing Mike Huckabee, the Israeli government is really screwing up, is really not playing its cards right.
Okay, so Michael jumps to the conclusion that, of course, it had to be, he says in an earlier piece, so you're going to hear it in a second, I think, he talks about how can you make that mistake? Can't you see the cross? Can't you see all of this? Just untethered from reality when you think about the fact that it is kind of a war zone right now. When he mentions Mike Huckabee, he's talking about a story you may have seen that American Christians and groups were having trouble getting visas to go into Israel. And I don't know why, but as I understand it, it was one person and he's been fired. And that's been solved. But Mike Huckabee wrote a letter and that was a dust up. So why that happened, we don't know. But Michael is putting those two together to suddenly indicate or at least make us think that Israel is anti-Christian. It's shooting churches and, you know, shutting down visas from traveling visas from Christians. Well, what is the truth? I would say the truth is that just no matter what Israel does, they're going to get hated. And that's kind of what we see happening. We're going to talk about this today with one of the nation's leading experts on this. It's a fascinating discussion. And I just hope that you won't go anywhere. But first, there are vast numbers of Americans who have not had a chance for life because their mothers have decided to terminate their lives, either in utero or with the abortion pill, whatever they're doing. And so even if for no other reason, that shouldn't happen in America because we've promised everyone the right to life, and that includes our babies. So on this July, the celebrating the birth of our nation, we remember that, and we want to do everything we can to change it. Preborn is certainly doing that, and that's by showing moms the photos of their baby in utero, where they can see them sucking their thumb or moving around. It's just beautiful, and that's what happens, and it changes moms' minds. Most of them actually do change their mind when they see that. One ultrasound is $28, and we just hope and pray that you'll be generous and give your best amount to help stop taking the lives of unborn babies in this country. We need to do it right now. So lots of things, good things are happening. Let's add this to the list. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Well, you can call us. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. You can call us at 662-821-2040 and leave a message, some response, some thing of observation, something you didn't like, something you did like. We love hearing from you. So call 662-821-2040 and to leave us a message about what you think about what you're hearing. Or you can write us at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. You can find us on any of the social media platforms. And you can also find us at my website, which is sandyrios.com. I think that it's easier to listen to the podcast doing that. If you're not used to podcasting, sandyrios.com. However, if you're an AFR listener, you probably have already discovered, I hope, that you can go to afr.net, afr.net, and listen to the program, or you can go to any social media platform, Apple or Spotify or Amazon or any of those, and listen to Sandy Rios 24/7 anytime. Well, you can listen to it, by the way, 24/7. Wasn't that clever? Anyway, so there are lots of ways to listen, and I encourage you to do that. Well, David Wormser has been our guest on more than one occasion. He is an expert on Israel. He travels all over the world. And has so much expertise in Islam and in Israel and all that part of the world, all the complex things, all those countries, all the machinations when we watch the news and we think, what? Huh? David understands all of that. And he's going to explain to us clearly today what's happening in Israel, what happened to that church in particular, but also in countries surrounding and what's going on in the Islamic world right now that Christians now are becoming the object of persecution. That's what we'll talk about today on this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Speaking of church, we turn now from Muslims to Christians. Horrible story out of Gaza. Horrible story. The IDF has struck the only Catholic church in Gaza. According to the reporting, 10:20 a.m. yesterday, the compound of the Holy Family in Gaza, which belongs to the Latin Patriarch, was struck by the Israeli army. Three people died from their injuries. Nine others were wounded, including one in critical condition, and the priest. The parish priest, Father Gabriel Romanelli, was also injured. This is the line from the Latin Patriarch. The Latin Patriarchate, which is the Catholic Church in Gaza, the Latin Patriarchate strongly condemns this tragedy and this targeting of innocent civilians and of a sacred place. So Israel came out later on after international outcry, including from the White House. Israel came out and said, oh, it was a mistake. It was an accident. Was it an accident? I don't see any evidence that it was an accident. Can you provide me some proof that it was an accident? You struck the church. Churches are pretty obvious targets. They're pretty obvious sites. You know, there's certain features, the cross, steeple, are pretty obvious. Can you explain to me how this was an accident? Haven't heard that. The Latin Patriarch seems to think it was intentional. The targeting of innocent civilians, not just a stray bullet, the targeting.
Sandy Rios with you. Well, I've just about had it, to be honest with you, with so-called conservative pundits twisting the facts and speaking about targeting Israel with lies and deceits. That's the voice of Michael Knowles. Michael's highly respected by millions. I don't know much about Michael, except that he spoke at TPUSA last weekend for Charlie Kirk. I know that he's very highly respected, maybe by some of you. And this is what he says about Israel. It's not true. We're going to talk about it today, and we're going to give you proof that it's not true. But I think the issue is, what in the world's going on here? What in the world where reasonable people who otherwise have a sense of truth and try to tell the truth on things happening in our country, how is this going so wrong? And so we're going to talk about that today. Remember that after, since the attacks from the Hamas on October the 7th of the northern part of Israel, there have been attacks on Israel for what? Starving Gazans, for slaughtering them, genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. We've had these accusations. And then we had the bombing of the heart of the nuclear program in Iran by the United States. And what happened? Israel gets slandered, criticized, accused of talking President Trump into this. Even President Trump fell for it and started criticizing Israel. What is wrong with this? What's going on here? And now we have this latest story, and there are a few others also, about the IDF has just bombed a Catholic church in Gaza. How dare they do that? In fact, as a matter of fact, the Pope Leo is joining in, claiming the same thing. The IDF has attacked this Catholic church. So Catholics in this country are up in arms. Friends of mine are up in arms. They're tweeting about it. They're going on social media. So I'm doing some pretty major battle with my hands and my thumb. But that's not important. The point is, why is this happening? I've asked David Wurmser to join us this morning. David, he's got a great big mind and can talk about much larger details than this. But let me just say that David has been our guest before. He was the Middle East advisor to former U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney, when Dick Cheney made sense, by the way. He was also a special assistant to John Bolton at the State Department, and John used to make a lot of sense, too. He was a good friend of mine. And so he was a research fellow on the Middle East at the American Enterprise Institute, served in the U.S. Navy Reserve as an intelligence officer at the rank of lieutenant commander. There's so much to say. He has a PhD in international relations from Johns Hopkins University. And it's just too long to tell you everything. Let me just say that he's highly respected. He has tremendous knowledge of Israel and the Middle East, and he joins us again today. David, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks. It's an honor to be with you.
All right, so let's talk about that supposed attack of the IDF of a Catholic church in Gaza. From your perspective and from your knowledge, David, and I know you're committed to truth like I am, what happened?
Well, from best I can put forward, I mean, you know, Mr. Knowles said that there's no evidence it was not. He said, essentially implied that it was, there's no evidence that Israel did not intend to do it. The truth is, there's no evidence that Israel did intend to do it. What seems to have happened was there's a lot of battles going on in those areas. Hamas consistently uses whatever shield they can, whether it's schools, whether it's tunnels, human population centers, UN installations, and churches. They tend to use these things as shields. Now, in this case, I don't think they used it as a shield, but what they were doing was there was heavy battles going on in that area, and an Israeli tank shell hit its target, the shrapnel flew. That is what the initial investigation says. So it wasn't targeted at all. It was collateral damage. And the facade of the church was damaged. And the debris from that facade flew into the back area where I think the people were. And that's why there were people injured and sadly were killed. And the interior of the church is untouched. There have been services by the Cardinal Pizzobola, of the Holy Land, Holy Land, and he conducted services in that church over the last few days. It is untouched inside. It is literally the facade, and some rocks flew from the facade into the back, and it was a shrapnel. The Israelis are doing a thorough investigation of it, but like so many things, and this is the problem Israel's having, it wants to get it right, these investigations, and that takes a week or two or more of going through the evidence, going through the communications, going through the trajectories, doing forensic analysis, and so on and so forth. And in the meantime, for 2 weeks, the narrative has spread that Israel targeted the church implied it destroyed the church. People in the church were killed rather than on the outside of the church, and it was intentional. So the initial investigation shows it was a tank shell that was launched against the Hamas target close by, and shrapnel broke off and hit the facade of the church. That's what the initial investigation shows. But that could change. But one thing that is clear, there was no intent, nor would it make any sense. The Israelis value very much their relationship with the Christian world. They see themselves as fighting the war for the whole Western world against Islamic radicalism. I mean, after all, Hamas makes it very clear that in the end it will exterminate Christianity as well, not just Judaism and the Jews in Israel. It says it all the time. So, again, just 2 days ago, one of their top officials said that after we're done with Israel and destroyed Israel, we're going to come after the Christian world and destroy it. So Israel has an alliance, ultimately, with Christianity to deal with this common threat. It also knows that Christianity is the foundation of American conservatism, whether it's evangelical, whether it's Catholic. In other words, the more religious you are in the United States, the more you read the Bible, the more you see Israel's connection to the land, the more you tend to be pro-Israeli, the more you don't like this leftist, radical, progressive attack on the West as a whole, part of the manifestation of which is Israel. So Israel understands that it needs to align with Christianity in the United States to maintain conservative support in the long haul, especially since kids in the United States who are trending conservative are also trending toward greater religiousness. Yep. So it would be a suicidal intent for Israel to attack this church. It would be hitting their most important ally and trend that they've identified as important for them. So it makes no sense on top of it all.
No, and the prime minister called the Pope, but he made a statement, you know, that this was an accident and apologized profusely. And still, yes, the Pope claimed that the IDF had intentionally attacked the church. It's pretty disgusting to me, but a couple of things, Michael. You know, you don't know, but I've been to Israel several times, and I have had a long history because I've been a Christian for a long time, and just believe Scripture, and the people of the book are, you know, I feel very much at one, But in the early years of my faith and knowing about Israel, I think things were a little different. I believe that there was a lot more hostility from Israel to Christians, a distrust. I would say a distrust.
Yeah.
And probably from World War II and the Nazis, the so-called Christian Hitler, we don't take that seriously, but I know that that was the narrative. But things have changed so much. I can testify to what you're saying, that Christians are now so much, even maybe though some suspect us, we have become, and I think Israelis understand, the best friends. Serious Christians are the best friends of the Jews. And so it makes absolutely no sense at all. And I would also add, the last time I think I was in it, I think it was the last time, I was on a national security trip to Israel, and I met with some, you know how they do that, Michael, I'm sure you know, they take you to all kinds of things, the Knesset. But we also hung out with the Flying Camels, and that was a brigade located in Israel that was going into Gaza, and micro-targeting terrorists. You know, like in an apartment building, they would move heaven and earth not to kill any innocent civilians and just take out the apartment, that one little place in that high building where the terrorist was. They perfected that. And I tell that story to prove what you're saying. Israel goes out of its way not to hurt innocent people. So,
also, by the way, I would add to that, with micro-targeting like that, if Israel really intended to hit that church, it wouldn't have nicked the facade.
That's true.
You know, that church wouldn't be standing if it intended to hit it.
So here's the problem, though. And now this is when we get into real deep trouble. And trust me, I've gotten into it, so it won't be the first time. But I don't understand what's going on with Pope Leo. I would say We should probably stop and listen to him rather than people understand, taking my word for it. This was his statement after the church was hit. And you'll hear a very bad interpreter telling us what he's saying, but it's clip five. Let's listen.
Aggiungere anche in questi giorni notizie drammatiche.
They continue to add dramatic news, especially in parts of the world as Gaza. I express my sincerest and deepest sorrow to hear about the Israeli attack on the Holy Family Parish in Gaza.
Come sapete, giovedì scorso,
as you know, last Thursday, three people were killed as a result of the attack, and many others were injured. We pray for these victims.
Najwa Ibrahim Latif Abu Daud.
And I am particularly close to their families and all of the parishioners.
Si aggiunge ai continui attacchi militari contro la popolazione civile e i luoghi di culto a Gaza.
We also pray, and I'm also close to all those who continue to be affected by the attacks on civilians in Gaza. So we need to stop immediately these barbaric acts of war.
Okay, that's enough. So you get the point. Leo was saying that he's really close to the people in that congregation in Gaza, and as a matter of fact, the most recent pope was in touch with the priest there daily, so they say. And here he is he's not only doubling down that IDF attacked the church, but he's also talking about Israel doing barbaric attacks on Gaza. Okay, so what is the truth right now, David, in the terms of the strife in Gaza? What is Israel doing right now?
Well, Israel is in a difficult place in Gaza because it's got three different things that are sort of converging. First of all, whatever it does, it doesn't want to kill the hostages, and that causes it to go very slowly. And so the war is taking a long time, apart from all the stuff that delayed the war because of all the weapons that were embargoed on Israel by Biden administration and so forth. You've got the basic fact that Israel doesn't want to hurt the hostages. The second thing is it doesn't want to hurt civilians. So it could do this heavy and hard, but it can't, because it basically is going house to house with infantry, and only after the house is cleared out, because the houses are so booby-trapped and filled with tunnels and things like that, that Israel, and then second of all, any larger structure becomes a sniper's nest the moment the unit moves on, that they do tend to destroy the houses after people are out of it. So you see a lot of destruction, but that's property destruction. That's not people were in those homes when they were destroyed. The whole point of the Israeli military is trying to avoid those civilian casualties. And so it's taking a long time. And people are getting tired of it. But Israelis are getting tired of it because their soldiers are, you know, it's a nation that relies on reservists, and they're called up from normal life. And many of them have served now 450 days. Imagine taking the last 2 years of your life and throwing 450 days away fighting in Gaza. It's just not what you want to keep doing. So there's that. But then there's the bigger problem, which is, if Israel doesn't go all the way and disarm Hamas and remove Hamas, then there's simply all this was for nothing. If the clock starts, the countdown starts for the next October 7th, because Hamas will come back, they will regroup, they will rearm, the rest of the jihadist world will be invigorated by the fact that Hamas survived, which in their definition is winning, victory, because they've withstood the Israeli army for 2 years. So then you get to the basic question. So what should Israel do? It can't give up. It can't not take Gaza, or at least not come to an agreement where Hamas is removed. And so the Israelis do try to negotiate an end to this war where Hamas is removed, but Hamas refuses. Or Israel goes in all the way and physically removes Hamas, or Israel accepts surrender, defeat, in which case you're only setting the stage for something much worse in the next 5 years or so. So Israel's in a very bad place. So what it's trying to do is various tactics. One I mentioned about the house-to-house with infantry. Another one is they've set up with an American company and American evangelicals a food distribution structure that is secure. Why is that important? Because this food is being given for free. Palestinians can come and get it for free, about a million meals a day. Now, there's 2 million Palestinians. So that means about, you know, right there, real meals are being given to about half the population right off. That's number one. Number two, it's for free. Palestinians don't pay for it. The other structures under the UN are compromised by Hamas, which means Hamas confiscates the food, it puts it in warehouses, and then it sells it at an exorbitant premium. So free food given to them, but then they sell it. And that is the funding structure through which Hamas manages to survive, pay its operatives, its police that kill people who dare speak up against them, who steal food, they call it, or so on and so forth. So the food distribution structure, the Israelis are trying to create a secure food distribution structure. And therein you get some of the problems, which is the Israelis say this is the area. If you're in northern Gaza, that is a war zone. You need to evacuate south. Well, the problem is Hamas isn't letting them evacuate south, the civilians, because they're human shields and they're hostages for them too. The second thing is the food distribution goes there through the UN, not through the Israelis. And the UN is working with Hamas in this grifting structure. So Hamas needs this in order for the money. And so the Israelis are trying to cut that off, but that leads to food shortages in localized areas of the north, which is exactly what Hamas wants, because then it's good propaganda. So this is all a question of a battle between Hamas and Israel over getting the Palestinians to areas where they're safe and where they can be fed. And the Israelis want to get them to safe areas to do that. Hamas wants to keep them in the middle of the battle zone as a hostage, as a shield, and as a grifting structure. So that's where some of this imagery is coming about starvation, although there's no indication of starvation. The caloric import of food into Gaza is astronomical. It's much higher per day than what we in the United States eat. It isn't at subsistence level. It is at, all the people here who worry about health, they would be complaining that the Israelis are deliberately trying to create cardiac arrest and obesity by the caloric import into Gaza at this point. So at any rate, so you have these big narratives, and this is the real issue. The battle has moved from being just a military conflict to being a battle of media, social media, and narrative. And the Israelis are very slow on the pickup to organize themselves around that. We have a document which should come out fairly soon publicly, but I've seen a copy of it, where Qatar put, which is the funder of the Muslim Brotherhood, the funder of Hamas, the funder of the jihadists who did the massacre in Syria of the Druze and the Christians earlier and the Alawites before that and the Kurds before that. We have a document where they basically said now that the conservatives have taken over the United States, there has to be a concerted effort in the media, social media, and so forth, to drive a wedge between Christians and Jews, to break the narrative that one, Jews are the descendants of the Jews of 2,000 years ago, and two, to invoke the greatest anti-Semitic mythology possible to drive a wedge between Christianity and Judaism, because they see like the Israelis do, that the conservative youth in America are getting more and more of their information from religious structures, And therefore, to break the conservative support for Israel, you try to drive a wedge between conservative Christian structures and the Jews in Israel. So well, that's really the backdrop of all this, and what we're seeing is that play out. The same day that that church was hit by accident, which was in the context of a battle raging around that church, there was that incident in the church in the West Bank, in Judea and Samaria. And then you had another incident elsewhere as well, all of them happening on the same day, which tells you that this was also, to some extent, an intentional campaign.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, David. We see that. We can see it. The thing that is, talk about powerfully skilled at doing this. They are. It's so quick, and it's in the bloodstream of Americans. You know, you've got Michael Knowles, who's just on the stage with Charlie Kirk at Turning Point USA, and he's spouting the stuff. You've got the Pope. Of course, that's a whole different issue. But we have so many of our social influencers doing this. It's just really appalling to me. But to just pin you down for a second, David, you're saying Qatar officially, or people in Qatar, or they're the ones designing this whole campaign to separate Christians from Israel, Jews?
Well, they're not the only ones, but they are a main mover of it, yes.
Okay.
Qatar is a hostile entity. They fund the Muslim Brotherhood. They're the ones funding the Islamification of church of mosques in Europe. They're funding a lot of these structures in the United States we're beginning to see pop up all over, and so forth. They're very much involved. We know what they did on the campuses, which is essentially corrupt our youth and give them a false narrative. So we see the effects of this campaign. We don't know the full parameters of it. But Qatar has spent, look, just this morning, Bill Bennett, who is a highly respected voice of encouraging virtue in children. I mean, his great book, The Book of Virtue, was meant to be read to children to encourage the rise of virtues in children 20, 30 years ago, in an era when we were facing greater and greater nihilism and sort of a radical anti-religiousness in American society that left us without values. And he was an instrumental person in it. But this morning he signed to be a representative of Qatar for $180,000 a month. I mean, this is real money out there. And his job is to try to convince people that Qatar's influence on the campuses is positive. And that's Bill Bennett, who would be one of the last people you'd expect. So the amount of money they're throwing around is immense, and it affects and it's distorting American discourse.
Yes. Okay, so also distorting American discourse is the nature of the Catholic Church and Catholics, and who so many are my dear friends, and I don't disparage their church. We don't disagree. I mean, we don't agree on doctrinal things, many doctrinal things, but we agree on the birth of Jesus and on the fact that he's the Messiah. We agree on that. But the one thing that's very different about evangelical Christians and Catholics is that Catholics are hierarchical. They really do trust their leaders. They trust the church with a capital C. Evangelicals are much more suspicious, much more individual. We believe that God speaks to us directly, as the Jews do also. We don't believe we need to go through someone to hear from him. So this is creating, I see, a huge divide, because I made a statement on a list that's true, and that is that you alluded to this earlier, that churches who survive or are able to exist in these kinds of areas, and I include China too, even though that's not Islamist, but true churches, true believers in Christ, true followers of God and through Jesus Christ, don't have church buildings that remain intact and operate independently in these areas. They just don't. True worshipers are killed and persecuted. So I think that if a church is existing in an area like that, I would suspect there's some compromise going on, because that's exactly what the Islamists do. Do we know anything? And when I said that, oh my gosh, all hell broke loose. But it has to be said, because it is true, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, just look at the numbers. in Gaza when Israel left in 1995, when it left entirely in 2005, there were about 5,000 Christians in Gaza. There are less than 1,000 now. And basically Gaza was an independent Palestinian state. Then look at Bethlehem's numbers. From 1948 to 1967, when Bethlehem was under the control of Jordan, the population of Christians in Bethlehem started declining from initially around 90%, and it went down to about 60%. It went way down in those 19 years. Then Israel took over in 67 and held on to it until 1993, 94, 95. And the population of Christians in Bethlehem increased a lot to the point where they were 85 to 90% of the population of Bethlehem in 1995 when Israel left and gave it to the Palestinian Authority in the hopes of a Palestinian state and peace. 95, that's only 30 years ago. The population now of Christianity in Bethlehem is under 10%. Under 10%. Basically, the Christian population of Bethlehem has been wiped out under Palestinian Authority within 30 years. That tells you who helps. And then now let's look at the Christians in Israel. In 1948, there were 90,000 Christians in Israel. Now there are 450,000. In other words, a 450%+ increase in Christianity in Israel. Christians serve in the Israeli military. Some are fairly senior officers now. Some are not known to be Christian or not known to be to the West, but in Israel, they appear on TV shows and everything and are really highly respected. Their voice and The Voice and all these other shows. The Christian community in Israel sort of turned the corner, and they no longer really are beginning to consider themselves Palestinian anymore or Arab. They're more and more considering themselves ancient Arameans and Syriacs and so forth that are the cousins of the Jewish people. And that makes them more and more feel affinity for Israel. So Christianity in Israel is thriving, and it's the only place in the Middle East where it's thriving. Everywhere else, we've seen a catastrophic decline. And so, you know, the proof's in the numbers.
There's a Christian caucus in your Knesset, you know. I mean, I am attesting to what you're saying. All right, so along with what's happening, David, here, we can leave it. We don't know if the Catholic Church is, you know, cooperating with Hamas or not. I suspect it, and that got me in a lot of trouble. I don't care, because it has to be said. But there is an uptick in this horrific persecution in other countries in the Middle East right now. I don't know the scale in terms of comparing in the past, but it just seems like there's a re-energizing of the wickedness. And Syria is one of those places. Egypt is one of those places. So before we talk about them in detail, what do you think is causing that? I would think that the Islamists would feel a little defeated, but evidently they don't.
No, they don't feel defeated because the Shiite Islamist world was defeated by Israel. And in doing that, they destroyed the security apparatus of the Syrian state. And that created a vacuum, which the jihadists, the Sunni jihadists filled, the Al-Qaeda, ISIS crowd filled. And they feel very strongly that they won. They defeated Assad. Not the former government of Syria, not Israel. And truth was, it was Israel. The security structures of the state were Hezbollah. And once Hezbollah was destroyed, the Syrian government didn't have any ability to defend itself because it had been so really cruel to its own people. It didn't have a lot of popular following anymore. So they relied on these foreigners, Hezbollah, and direct Iranian IRGC units to keep them in power. So when Israel destroyed them, they fell. But the Sunni world, again encouraged by Qatar and to some extent by Turkey, convinced themselves that this was a great victory of their power.
Okay.
And second of all, it gets into kind of mystical things, but the Arabs think that they were weak because they abandoned the purity of the first founders of Islam. The founders were called Salaf, and those Salaf forms a movement called Salafi, namely that we, if we return to the purity of the first generations of Islam, then Islam will take over the world again. It was because we had abandoned their purity. And where was that group most defined as pure and powerful? In Damascus, under the Umayyad Caliphate when it arose, which was the first major caliphate after Muhammad, was the Umayyad Caliphate. So they feel that the Umayyad Caliphate is the Salafi purity. If you recreate it, you recreate Islam will take over the world, and it was anchored in Damascus. It's the epicenter of it. So when you have these Sunni Salafi following jihadists take Damascus, the first thing that occurs to them is the Umayyad Caliphate is rising again. So they have this confidence that Allah now favors them, that it smiles on them, and that now this is the battle. This is the great battle, the apocalyptic battle for the final victory of Islam over evil.
Okay.
That's how they look at it. So in that context, then you look at what they're doing to the minorities in Syria, what they're doing to the Christians around the region, and then it starts making a lot more sense.
It does. Let me just say, simply put, for just people listening, Islam is divided into two main parts, and it is Shia and Sunni, and Iran is Shia. And so that's what David's talking about. And with Iran having been attacked and their nuclear weapons being pretty, for the most part, destroyed for right now, that's what he's talking. So now the Sunni, which is more what we're more familiar with, that's Al-Qaeda, that's where we fought in Iraq and all of those areas, they're filling their oats. That's what he's just saying. They think now they're the ones taking up the mantle of true Islam. So is that also true in Egypt? Because I'm really surprised to see what they're doing to Christians in Egypt right now.
1,000 Christians a day are leaving Egypt. Egypt was one-third Christian only in the 50s. It is one of the oldest. The Coptic Church was still speaking an ancient form of the Egyptian language. They are one of the oldest churches in Christianity. They're not the oldest. The oldest are the Syriac and Malkite and Aramean, not Aramaic. Although Aramaic, the Aramean, not Armenian, sorry.
Right.
Armenian is old. It's not, but it's about 200-300 years younger than the Aramean, which spoke Aramaic. Those churches are the oldest, and they are being destroyed in their cradle. This is the cradle of Christianity, and they are being wiped out. Mm-hmm. And in Egypt, with 1,000 leaving a day, it is probably now only about 10% Christian. And you get to a point where critical mass just falls apart fairly soon, and the rest just leave. There's still a fairly large concentration in Lebanon, parts of Syria, and, of course, in Israel. And, again, they're under siege. When the Druze were killed over the last week, that minority sect that we saw those massacres over the last week, people didn't notice there are some Christians living in the Druze areas, and they were being slaughtered along with the Druze, such that the one of the main churches of Christianity in that area, one of those early churches, put out a notice saying, please help us. We're facing total destruction. And they appealed to Israel to intervene, the United States to intervene, anybody that would help them against this onslaught by the jihad forces. And more than about four, we know now at least four dozen were killed. We don't know the final numbers because the dust is still settling on this massacre, which looks like it's about 2,000 Druze and at least four dozen Christians. But it was a real orgy. We also know what happened to the Alawites in the northeast of Syria only two, three months ago. They killed about 1,000 Alawites. And then there's the oldest Aramaic-speaking village in the world, Malala, which is just northeast of Damascus, northwest of Damascus. Had to be evacuated by threats by these jihadists over the last month as well. So there's an assault on Christianity and its cradle going on. Egypt, I don't know if there's going to be critical mass much longer. There's still a lot of critical mass in in Lebanon and in Syria. But that is, I think, the coming battlefield. And the key that they're trying to do is divide Israel from the Christians, because right now the Israelis are the only power locally that can help defend these minorities. And that, so they have to paralyze Israel by driving a wedge between Israel and the United States and Christians and so forth.
Well, my head is spinning, David, but I want to, we could talk a long time. There's so much more to say. I've got a million more clips, a million more stories, but I do want to ask you before we say goodbye, and I know this is probably a tough question and tough for you to answer. President Trump has made some, maybe some serious mistakes, I think, in his relations in the Middle East. I think it was a huge mistake when he came out and criticizing Israel after that bombing in, after we bombed Iran. He seemed to be, I don't know who was talking to him, but suddenly he was seeming to reflect the notion that Bibi Netanyahu had twisted his arm and given him bad information to get him to go into that and do the bombing. So that was very disheartening. And then also we have the recognition of the al-Jalani, the new Islamist leader in Syria, who is now overseeing all the things you just talked about. And we could go on. And, there's then our relationships and ties with Qatar, I always say, but Qatar, I'll take your lead. Qatar, what's happening, David, that there's some major disconnect between the reality of Islam and what they want to happen in terms of business relations?
Well, there certainly is. You know, we want to have a peaceful area so that there's a lot of money there. There's also a lot of strategic interest in making sure that a lot of that money goes to the West, to the United States, rather than to China and so forth. So there's a great effort that the president's made to try to wrench away the Middle East from China's orbit and Chinese business and so on and so forth. And that is an important strategic goal. The problem that we're having is that the president, and this is where I'm worried about the president overall, because it's a reflection also of what sort of went wrong in the first term. The president doesn't have a lot of friends in Washington. It's a thin veneer. It's a thin stratum, thin level above the Washington establishment, which still has to provide a lot of services for any administration. And the whole goal of a lot of this establishment is to veer the president off who he is and bring him back to the establishment positions. So Steve Witkoff, our emissary dealing with a lot of these issues, he has to, his staff, a lot of it are professional foreign service and so on and so forth. He has to rely on the State Department to some extent. And they're not Trump people, a lot of these people. The same thing that, now with Tom Barrack, which is our ambassador in Turkey, who's basically behind the Syria and Lebanon policy, there might be something else going on. He seems to be very smitten by Turkey, and he seems not to be able to differentiate quite well the differences between Turkish interests and our interests. And there might be a problem there. But what I'm trying to say is the president, when he gets most of the facts, comes out in the right place. But the problem is, look, the president is not a Middle East expert. He's not going to write a dissertation tomorrow about medieval Islamic philosophy. So he relies on experts to help get him smart, essentially, on this area. The problem is Washington is happy to provide him these experts to veer him off in places he shouldn't go. To the president's credit, often he begins to realize that, and he changes course. He has no problem sometimes changing course. And so I think the president in the long run winds up in the right place, but there will be moments like what you, like those you mentioned, where it's a little bit uncomfortable.
You know, I just want to go on record as remembering, as you do, only you were in the middle of it, that there was a time when our foreign service agents, even our FBI agents, our CIA agents understood Islam. Our military understood Islam. They understood the doctrines of it, and that was displayed on 9/11. They knew how to respond. They knew how to go after and how to try to destroy some of these networks. And then something horrible happened, and that was that, you know, the Islamists came up with the same kind of propaganda twist that they're doing now through Islamophobia, And quickly, they shut us down from any criticism. And then suddenly, all this information about Islam is shut off from training and army and FBI and everywhere. So we do have a lot of ignorance about it right now. And we saw how that ignorance affected the war in the Middle East. Stupid decisions, stupid policies, David. It just makes me shudder to think what this is going to lead to.
Look, they destroyed our education system. They took over our education system, whether it's in the elementary, all the way through high school, and certainly on the college level. They used this accusation of Islamophobia to bring these Islamist structures in to advise our educational institutions. Then they also took over, for example, MISA, the Middle East Studies Association, is Islamist in its orientation. Even the Israel Studies Association is run by people who are anti-Israeli, who are what are called post-Zionists. They believe Israel shouldn't exist. So you had the basic corruption of academia. It shouldn't be a surprise for Americans, because we also have that with American studies in America, the 1619 Project and, all these other things. They're destroying America's own history. So, of course, they're also going to pervert, essentially, knowledge of the Middle East. And the thing is that the FBI, CIA, and so forth, they're hiring all these people out of college who now are indoctrinated this way. So anybody under 35 being hired, which are all these analysts that are going through all this material, are basically coming from a broken educational structure.
And a lack of foundation on this very important issue.
Yeah.
So, but we sorted out some of the crooked places today, David, in our conversation. And I'm hoping, of course, I always hope and pray that my listeners will take heed and share information and truth. Truth has a way of having an effect, and that's what we're praying for. But meanwhile, we pray for Israel, and I just want you to know that we do that. And David Wormser, it's always a pleasure, always a pleasure.
Thank
and where
you.
Can people?
It's always an honor for me.
David, I've asked you this before, and I don't know the answer. You're very busy on social media. How could they find you?
Well, I'm at Wormser Scribbit. Is my handle for Twitter, but also centerforsecuritypolicy.com is another address I have. Dwormser at centerforsecuritypolicy.com. I'm at the Center for Security Policy in Washington, so that's my address.
Okay. All right. Very good. Very, very good. Okay, David, we'll take care, and we'll continue to work until we get it right. So I appreciate you joining
me
today. God bless you, David. Thank you so much.
You too. God bless you.
All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
When you become a monthly sponsor of Preborn, you will actually get a picture of the babies you help to save. That's pretty good plum, isn't it? But also, you can sponsor what's called a day of life. And that's sponsoring an entire day of women, having ultrasounds at these clinics. And it's more money. It's a bigger investment. For a gift of $5,000, you can sponsor an entire day. And so that's why we call it a day of life. If you'd like to do that, if you can afford to do that, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Okay, well, I have two clips that I want to play for you to give you kind of a taste of what we're talking about in the Middle East right now. Egypt has been kind of a safe place for Christians, at least for a time, under al-Sisi, and then after the Muslim Brotherhood was defeated, when Barack Obama got into office, he pumped up the Muslim Brotherhood, and they actually took power and brought down Mubarak, who was the leader at the time. It was a mess. And then al-Sisi, who was the Egyptian general, came in to take power and put down the Muslim Brotherhood, and Christians had a bit of a peace, but not now. David has just explained why things have changed as the Sunni Muslims are feeling their oats plenty. And so this next clip is really hard to listen to, I have to tell you. Before we listen, I'll just tell you that they are the Egyptians are attacking Christians in the most violent ways, and they're destroying their homes. In this case, they were upset because a Christian had put up some kind of an antenna to receive signal, and it made his house higher than the house of the Muslims. And so they came in to destroy the house. So you'll hear a woman. You won't be able to understand her, I know. But she is looking through like a cutout window. You know how they have these intricate cutouts, mosaics kind of like that, but also just figures. They have a lot of ornate things, and this window has an ornate plate on it. And she's like standing on the other side of this window, and she's watching them break into her house. And you hear her, I'll tell you what she's saying. Do you see what they're doing? How they behave? Save us, Lord. Save us, Lord. Have mercy. Please, please hear me. And it gets progressively worse. It's hard to listen to, I'll tell you right up front. But I want you, she is a believer in Christ, a Coptic Christian, and I want you to hear this so that we can understand what they're going through, because this is the future for the world. As things get worse and worse, we know that Jesus will prevail, but this is what the Islamists do to Christians in these countries. Let's listen.
يا مصر يا بلد الامن والامان انقذونا ارجوكم انقذونا هنموت بدلونا بدلونا بدلونا
اوعى عشان ما تطفيش طب يجي فيك اوعى الطب يجي فيك هيعور
حاضر 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 يا مرتي شيروا اللايف شيروا اللايف لكل الناس لو سمحت شيروا اللايف لكل الناس تيجي تلحقنا من شدة الحوسلة والبهدلة اللي احنا فيها بتسحق بعيد أرجوكم الحقونا بدل الدنيا وكسر البيبان كسروا كل حاجة ما خلوش حاجة في البيت كسرونا يا رب يا رب يا رب يا رب يا رب ارحمنا يا رب الحقنا يا رب يا رب يا ماما يا امي يا امي يا ماما قومي يا ماما يا امي الحق لامك يا امي يا امي الحق لامك
يا امي يا امي
starts out by saying, do you see what they're doing? Do you see how they behave? Lord, save us. Save us. Show us mercy. Please, please help me. We're going to die. And then the tape ends. You know, that's not made up. That's not a dramatic actress. It's not a, you know, artificial intelligence. That's a real person. And that is how the Islamists behave all over the world. When they're unleashed, that is how they behave, because they believe that they're going to rule, that they're going to conquer. They believe they should kill in the most violent ways people that don't share their faith. And that's what they're doing to the Druze in Syria, and that's what they're doing to Christians in Syria, Christians in Egypt, and in other parts of the world. And so this is what the Jews are facing in Israel. They understand that because they live close to them, and they know what, you know, not all Arabs do that, not all Arab Muslims do that. But if they take their faith seriously and they are stirred, this is exactly what they do. And the Jews know that, and this is what they live next to. And Hamas is, you know, it is a Sunni Muslim extreme. You say extremist, I'd say they just really believe what the Quran says. They just really believe, and so they do. And this is what Israel is facing. So I hope that now you know how to listen a little bit better with some discernment. And also, really be aware, those of you in my listening who are Catholic, who are from other faiths, let's try to understand this without having knee-jerk reactions. I suspect my Catholic friends have had knee-jerk reactions to this Catholic Church because the Pope is close to this guy, because they heard what Pope Leo said. He's not speaking the truth. I know that's almost apostasy to Catholics, but Israel did not bomb that church on purpose. And as David said, if they had, it would have been destroyed. It wouldn't have been some little nick. We have to be really honest about what's going on and work together, because above all, we have to seek unity in Christ, because we're going to be the object of this kind of hate they won't destroy the Jews, but they will come after Christians anyway. Well, I hope that this has been helpful. It's been helpful to me, and maybe not encouraging, except to understand that we knew this was going to happen. God has been prophesied in Scripture. It's proof of the gospel. And it's also proof that Jesus is coming again to that part of the world, if you can believe it, to that part of the world. He is going to return to be the Prince of Peace, the King of Kings, and the Lord of Lords. And that's all I have to say on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.